Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're talking advanced wide receiver stats and Elijah Mitchell on RotoViz Radio.
What's up, RotoViz?
Welcome to RotoViz Radio. This is the RotoViz Fantasy Football Show. I am Curtis Patrick, joined by Dave Caban. We're two of the owners here at RotoViz, and this is episode two for this week. And we're going to talk about some deep stats. Always love checking in with Dave, trying to find these names that are popping in some of our leading indicator metrics. We can be a little ahead of the curve, whether it's maybe a waiver wire claim, trading a little early in Dynasty, or maybe just reevaluating a player that maybe is flying under the radar and looking into him a little bit deeper after the fact. So we're going to start this show breaking up some wide receivers, and then we're going to talk about a player who's proven to be 2021's James Robinson. So, Dave, what do you have for us on the wide receivers today?
We are talking wide receivers, Curtis. And I am excited about this because while I was doing research this week, I had no idea where it was going to lead me to what we're going to talk about this episode. But I have stumbled upon somebody popping very often in these metrics than anybody that goes in and takes a look at the Advanced Stats Explorer right now and spends a little time looking at wide receivers will probably be surprised to see scoring so highly. So I am going to read through some of these leaderboards right now, looking at the top 20 players in a variety of metrics. When I am done, I think it will be pretty clear, and you can tell me who this player is, and we can talk about if this is something that would probably be as much of a shock for most of the more casual players out there, as I would imagine. So let's start with something simple. Routes per target. We're looking at weeks 1 through 11, as I do not have routes yet for everybody in week 12. So I wanted to make it kind of a fairer playing field here. Wide receivers with a minimum of 50 targets. So routes per target. Cooper Kupp, Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, AJ Brown, Deontay Johnson, Deebo Samuel, Rondale Moore, Keenan Allen, Brandon Cooks, DK Metcalf, DJ Moore, Stephon Diggs, Hunter Renfrow, Calvin Ridley, Terry McLaurin, Justin Jefferson, CD Lamb, Darnell Mooney, Marquise Brown. For a little context there, Cooper Kupp is receiving a target about every 2.9 routes. Marquise Brown towards the end of that list is at 4.1. Players towards the middle of that group, you have DK Metcalf, Brandon Cooks at 3.7. All right, we'll move on here. Receptions per catchable passes. So what percentage of passes that are deemed catchable are players actually converting into receptions? You have Tyler Lockett at 92%, Hunter Renfrow at 92%, Rondale Moore, Chris Godwin, Christian Kirk, Diggs, Tim Patrick, Cole Beasley, Adam Thielen, Brandon Cooks, Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, Michael Pittman, Devontae Adams, Mecole Hardman, Tyler Boyd, Metcalf, Sanders, Kupp, Marquise Brown. Those players are all at 87% or higher. Let's move on to yards per route run. You have Cooper Kupp leading the charge at 3.4, followed by Deebo Samuel, Devontae Adams, Ja'Marr Chase, Jefferson, Lamb, Lockett, Metcalf, Brown, Hill, Diggs, Pittman, Brown, Johnson, Kirk, Rondell Moore, Keenan Allen, Terry McLaurin, Mike Williams, and Amari Cooper. I realize this isn't the greatest radio, but when we get to where we're going with this, I think it will be worth it. Okay. Yards after the catch per rec. Number one, Deebo Samuel at 9.9, Rondell Moore at 8.1, Hardman at 8, Ja'Marr Chase, Chris Godwin, Claypool, Chenault, Williams, Cooper Kupp, Lamb, Johnson, Brown, Adams, Boyd, Moore, Justin Jefferson, then Van Jefferson, DK Metcalf, Hunter Renfrow, Robert Woods. Routes per touchdown. A lot of the same faces here. Kupp, Metcalf, Evans, Chase, Thielen, Mike Williams, Hill, Lamb, Marquise Brown, Amari Cooper, Diggs, Samuel, Justin Jefferson, Elijah Moore, Corey Davis, Devonta Adams, Michael Pittman, Hunter Renfrow, Christian Kirk, Terry McLaurin. And then you have evasion percentage. Mecole Hardman, new name we haven't seen much of yet. Ja'Marr Chase, Rondell Moore, LaVisca Chenault, Hunter Renfrow, Deebo, Tyreek, Lamb, Metcalf, Godwin, Corey Davis, Amari Cooper, Claypool, Deontay Johnson, Devonta Adams, Calvin Ridley, Mike Evans, Stephon Diggs, Cooper Kupp, Marquise Brown. Now that I have said a bunch of names, Curtis, and I could have just listed off this player, his ranking in these, but I felt like it was important that I present the group of players that we're seeing this name pop up consistently with in just about every one of those lists that I read. He only was missing from one. Do you know who the player that I wanted to highlight for this is?
Yeah, there's very little doubt in my mind that it's Hunter Renfrow. He has nothing similar. He has nothing in common with any of the other players that you've read off other than his efficiency, like the actual production. As a specimen, he is not the same. As a prospect, he was not the same. His physical tools are not the same. It has to be Renfrow.
Yes, it is Renfrow. So I went back to myself as I was looking at this. I said, was there a piece of this profile of him coming out of Clemson that I was missing in terms of the athletic profile? Not a great 40, decent in terms of his shuttle. His agility was overall pretty good. Not the strongest player, not the best leaper, just not the most athletic. But we see him in this list with some of the absolute best players in the league. When you see him showing up in these lists with guys like Deebo Samuel, Cooper Kupp consistently, players like Mecole Hardman that we know are super athletic, scoring touchdowns at a good clip, putting together significant yards after the catch, with a really high evasion percentage, Curtis. And the thing is, it's not just that we see him on some of these lists. It was how consistent he's getting in there where we see some of the best players like Devonta Adams across these lists. And yeah, we saw other players like Rondell Moore. That's exciting to see him on a couple of these. Same thing with Chenault. But I just don't think people would have expected this from Hunter Renfrow. So we've talked about how when you see players hitting across metrics like these, after a while, you have to take notice. Is Hunter Renfrow possibly a much better player than he's being given credit for?
It's probably harder to construct an argument the other direction, honestly. I mean, you know, another player that was on a couple of the lists that I think is a fair comparison from a fantasy production standpoint and from a standpoint that he wasn't really taken seriously until he was taken seriously, yep, is Cole Beasley.
Yep.
That's kind of how I see him. I just don't know what else to say about it because, I mean, I don't think Hunter Renfrow is a player he's, even if he finishes this season as a low end wide receiver too, which it looks like he's trending towards doing. He's not going to be drafted as a top 24 wide receiver next year. Probably never. Yeah. Even if he's a perennial wide receiver too, we even see people who did have some level of college pedigree or college production profile or some level of athleticism, they've struggled to have a redraft ADP bounce in years past. Like more impressive players like Jarvis Landry, they still are always doubted because of the ceiling being so like target dependent. And I think like Renfro's double penalized for being an old prospect who's not athletic, who also took a while to pop in the NFL. He's just not going to become valuable. He's not going to hold any dynasty value, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have any roster value. He's definitely the type of player that it's great to have on your squad, plugging in to the flex, never going to inspire any fear in your opponents when they're, you know, looking at your head-to-head against your squad in a given week. But just finding his way to 13, 14 points like clockwork. I mean, those players definitely hold a lot of value, especially in the deeper dynasty formats that have become popular in recent years. So I think this is a great type of player to be talking about. And I think calling him the next Cole Beasley or the new Cole Beasley is perhaps very appropriate. You know, another name that popped a little bit, and I don't know if we had planned on talking about this player, but maybe one that could accrue some value. It could be more exciting moving forward. I don't think he was on every list, but he was on definitely like 2/3 of them.
Yep.
It was Michael Pittman Jr.
Yes. Yes. Yep.
Year two. And you know, when, you know, I just even remember us cutting him up, Dave, in the prospect box score scout, you know, a couple of years ago. And, you know, Michael Thomas was a consistent sim that was coming back for him, both athletically from a production profile, even from a draft capital perspective, and having an opportunity to maybe not immediately, but having a very low bar to clear to become a team alpha, despite not having the first round draft capital, et cetera. So, you know, he really is turning into a little bit of that possession monster for the Colts, and with their offense improving, scoring more touchdowns. I actually think he is an interesting name that we can pull here, who probably is not commanding that type of value, but like making trades like Mike Evans for Michael Pittman Jr., you know, that type of stuff. Those are the types of deals that you can be making this time of year, potentially, in more novice dynasty leagues, or even players that are, you know, do you move Devontae Adams for Michael Pittman plus,
yep,
you know, knowing that Aaron Rodgers might be going away, and that Adams is, you know, really on the wrong side of the age apex. Like, those are the types of things that I think these exercises are so great for, because it starts, you start to imagine, like, what are the different combinations of moves I could make to get this player on my squad that would make sense?
Yeah. Final note that I have on Renfro, then I'll kind of talk about Pittman there for a second. Renfro is also ranks 4 in Racer, you know, which is another metric that's pretty telling, generally something you want to look for. So I apologize to everybody for just reading through that, you know, laundry list of names there, but I think it was important for highlighting the point. And I agree with you completely, Curtis, that what you're going to see likely with him is he's going to be a player in redraft that you're able to get at an ADP that he has a very good chance of outperforming. And in some drafts, you'll be able to get him maybe a round or two later. We'll have to see where things shake out in the confines of that Raiders offense with Henry Ruggs not now there long term, you know, not going to be coming back anytime soon. I don't think anyone would imagine it. Just this has allowed him to entrench himself more in that offense. The point on Michael Pittman, I really like too, as you know, Carson Wentz this year has been somewhat functional as a quarterback streamer. We're seeing that manifest for Pittman, who's becoming, you know, the go-to option there. It's nice to see him in these lists, and I think they make a nice combination of players that at this point their value might not match, or their perception of their value probably doesn't match where they are. So, two interesting names there. It looks like you had another thing to interject though.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, this is not, yeah, this is a metric that we didn't mention for Hunter Renfro, but it's one that he is elite at, and it's the only one that really aligns with his athletic profile. I mean, he did profile as an agile player, mm-hmm. At least as a top quartile in the agility physical metrics, and that is what's separating that's what's separating him from the pack and literally on the field. And he averages 2.23 yards per target of separation. And that's fourth best in the NFL among wide receivers. And so if you can get open, you're going to get targets, especially on a team like the Raiders that is at least until, you know, a week ago, and we saw DeSean Jackson inject some new energy into the offense as well. Until recently has had very little to get excited about, you know, Renfro being open, being dependable. And then when you have that much separation, it makes sense that you could then have a high evasion rate. You know, you're going to get a little bit of a head of steam before you take on that first defender, or maybe, you know, they touch you and you're running for a couple steps before, you know, you can come, you know, you're going to get dragged down, that type of thing. You're not constantly making contested catches. And so therefore you can add something. He's just 84 wide receiver 84 in contested catch rate, only 19 targets contested. So he's going to be underdrafted, but you also want to be careful not to be like too cute and be the one guy that's overdrafting him, because the team is probably going to invest a wide receiver next year, and you know, he could just as easily become Randall Cobb, where his role just gets, you know, evaporated if enough talent is added to the offense. So I got to be wary of these players, but 2021 definitely has proven to be value.
Yeah, and that's probably a fair little note to share there. A good reminder for everybody. Yeah, this is, for as positively as I presented him, still not the type of player that you want to overdraft. I think that runs us down, though, through the wide receiver stuff. If you don't mind, seeing as you're in the host seat for this, I'd like to push us now into talking about Elijah Mitchell.
Yeah. Hey, Dave, let's talk about Elijah Mitchell.
Okay. All right. So, Curtis, you referred to Elijah Mitchell as this year's James Robinson. Oh, wow. The deep dive sound effect is coming back. And that's because this guy may have gone away for a couple of weeks and came back. Look at that segue. Early on in the season, I think it was week one, it comes out and dominates. And then you have people spending a crazy amount of budget on him. But by and large, he really has justified that. I think that Mitchell is doing what people had hoped that Trey Sermon would do for their teams. On the year, 143 rushes, 693 yards. That means he's averaging 4.8 a clip. Only has 3 rushing touchdowns, has not been used that much as a wide receiver, but's converted 14 of the 15 targets aimed at him for 108 receiving yards. As I said, week one, good performance, 10.4 points, has picked things up from week seven on, 16.7 PPR, 19.7, 12.9, 9.1, followed up by 27.8 game in week 12. Like I said, still only 3 touchdowns for him. So a lot of these numbers have come just from producing as a rusher, accruing yardage. He's actually 8 in total yards. And keep in mind, this is a guy that has not played a full gamut of games this season. So that's pretty impressive. Sits in at the RB21 in terms of PPR per game, 23 in expected points per game, 17 in fantasy points over expectation per game. So he has been pretty efficient. Now, this was a player, Curtis, that was drafted in the sixth round, 194 overall, has a speed score of 109, which was pretty impressive. Also, when you look at the athletic profile that he had coming out of college, 97th percentile 40-yard dash, 78th percentile shuttle, 76th percentile cone, just 22 in the bench, but 93 in the broad, 83 in the vert. This is clearly a very, very athletic player, went to a smaller school, but has really performed pretty well this year. So I guess where we head with this information is into a discussion about the Niners backfield, how this impacts Trey Sermon, who has been a pretty large bust, given the hopes for him heading into the year. And also you have Jeff Wilson in that backfield, a couple other names. But the thing that I worry about is, and it's kind of the same thing we talked about with Renfro, the feelings of a player when they enter the league, especially at that running back position where the team can only put one or two backs on the field most of the time. Does this sixth round valuation hinder how we can think about him from a fantasy perspective? It'd be easy to be pretty excited about him rolling into next year, but I think that thought's always going to be in the back of people's minds, despite the solid athletic profile and the way that he's backed it up with his on-field performance.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it should worry you. Even if he finishes the back half of the season as an RB1, if he gets hot, I think the way to look at it is kind of how we viewed Myles Gaskin coming into this season. He finished extremely hot in 2020. Bona fide RB1 over the final like eight games of the season or something. And we still had questions. We had questions throughout the draft process. Who would the Dolphins add? And then it was unclear in camp, you know, what was going to happen, despite us thinking that it should be hands down Gaskin. The coaching staff still experimented with Malcolm Brown and others. I think that's always going to be the question when, you know, the coaching staff wasn't willing to invest materially in the player. But then, you know, we see the other side, even in other situations, other positions, you know, going back to like the RG3 Kirk Cousins situation. I actually think Shanahan was with Washington when all that was going down in some sort of capacity, because I believe he was the engineer behind the RG3 offense. If memory serves, it's been a long time, getting old. the team spent two picks. The later draft pick proved to be, you know, the better one ultimately, and he ended up winning the job. I mean, that's not dissimilar from what we're talking about here. The team did trade up for Trey Sermon, but they didn't spend a fortune on either player. And they ultimately, if they had drafted Mitchell in the third instead of Sermon, you know, maybe you'd view the situation differently. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, Shanahan definitely is not one that's been married to. He's never been necessarily married to depth chart or draft capital before, but because of that, you like for all the reasons that it makes it fun to invest from a zero RB perspective, it also creates equal danger because it's just always that uncertain backfield situation. I did want to, from like an upside perspective though, and just continuing to use some of our other tools. I mean, I love some of the names that you were bringing up there and mentioning the athleticism and the speed score, et cetera. So two ways to maybe think about Elijah Mitchell. I'll give you one small school example and one big school example. Yep. So from a small school example, highly athletic, smaller player, very dynamic. One comparison I would make for Elijah Mitchell is he's Jerick McKinnon with actual running back skills. And then another one would be that he's Bryce Love without any major school pedigree. And actually his number one sim in the prospect box score scout is Bryce Love. Now Bryce Love didn't pan out in the NFL and he had the unfortunate knee injury in school, but he was like going to be an all-timer level prospect from a production profile perspective. The size was going to be the question. And I don't even think at his peak, he may not have been as fast as Mitchell's 4.38 in the 40. I mean, Love was pretty fast before the injury. I don't know if he was that fast. You know, when you start thinking about it that way, I mean, hey, we got excited about McKinnon just because of the pure athleticism. I mean, he never really actually did a whole lot. Like Mitchell's already done a lot. Like it would be awesome if McKinnon had ever done what Mitchell's already done. And how would we be thinking about that? I don't know. I mean, I guess I reserve the right, you know, to continue to evaluate the situation. As you mentioned, I mean, I think going all in with the FAB at the beginning of the year, that was absolutely the right call. I'm hopeful that a lot of people listen to those recommendations because he's going to help win some fantasy championships, I think, or at least help some people get into playoffs that are in that middle of their league. But in terms of dynasty, in terms of like 2022 best ball stuff, hey, we just got to see how this plays out a little bit. But I love that you highlighted him, and he's going to be one of the players that we think about as we look back on 2021. You know, who were those players that kind of helped write the story of who won trophies and who didn't? And it seems to be shaping up that Elijah Mitchell is going to be one of those players.
Yeah, it certainly does. And I think you make a good point there that we're at a point in time where maybe it's still a little bit hard to talk about this with a full picture, because if he really comes out and just crushes things down the stretch, that's going to give us a different lens or just more information that we can use to make the decision. But I will just comment on where my head is at right now with a guy like him. I think he's exciting, but I do think that if you're playing the probability game with players like Mitchell, I think you're probably better off being the person that keeps them in the back of your mind, keeps them in their back pocket, doesn't invest too heavily moving into the next season. And then when something happens and this player ends up on another depth chart, a situation like that, that's when you make your move. Because it is a fickle position. It's a fickle league. And I think that you could easily, like you said, get burnt by a player like this, but we're going to have to come back and reevaluate this once we have those final games under our belt this year.
Yeah, I think that's great counsel. And then I think the one other practical application or exercise with a player like Mitchell, for the reasons that you stated, if you find Mitchell on your roster, and dynasty in particular, and you're not a serious competitor, the move here is to sell 100 times out of 100. Just because, I mean, whether it's been Philip Lindsay, even Gaskin, Willie Parker, Alfred Morris, all the different examples that you can think of, players that, okay, when they get the opportunity again, they produce, but they're never guaranteed that opportunity. It's just, this is the max value that you're going to get is for a player who's just coming off an insane workload and has a wide open runway heading into the end of the season. I mean, it's not outside the realm of possibility to get a playoff first from a team that is, you know, just lost Dalvin Cook or just lost Christian McCaffrey. So playoff first in exchange for Mitchell, like you just make that deal and you figure it out later because you're more likely to get a player to add to your squad that will have a lasting value in that situation. So, we talked about investing next year. We talked about, just him as a player overall, but don't want to lose sight of the fact that, have an opportunity to really get a nice return on whatever investment you may have had in Mitchell.
Yeah, it's a great point. And if people are having trouble letting him off of their team, especially when we talk about him being this year's James Robinson, keep in mind the Jaguars. Now, I know there's a change in the coaching staff there, but went right ahead and used their first round pick on another back, right? So, hey, that could same type of thing could happen, even a team that already has some backs there. So maybe that will make it a little bit easier for you to let him off the team.
100%. Well, Dave, I got to say, I like the players that you highlighted today. They're not the sexiest of players in terms of the college pedigree or the name value, but players like Renfro, players like Mitchell, we know they are so important to play correctly and to identify them early. And so it's just one opportunity here as we close today's show to highlight the great work being done every week by people like Sam Wallace on our waiver wire. By people like Travis May and our Devy team on the workups that they do on these players as prospects before they come in the NFL. So it becomes easier for us to imagine what they would do if they got this type of workload. And also just pointing back to the great work done by Travis and our ownership team year in, year out on our rookie guide. And so I just want to create that buzz and that excitement. I mean, Mitchell's a player that his name was in that guide last year. We didn't put every name of every drafted player, but he was a name in the guide. And so He may not have been drafted, but because of that, he should have been on your radar. So, very excited. I thought this was a fire episode. Good on you for unearthing those two names. We're going to come back on Friday morning and answer some potential go for it or not questions, or start sit questions, whatever it is that you're struggling with your fantasy squad, your lineup, or maybe you just want a player take that that you'd like us to dive into. We can dedicate a portion of the show to that. So make sure you at me or Dave or both of us on Twitter, and we will try to insert your question into the show.
Thank you for listening to the RotoViz Fantasy Football Show. Send us questions at rvffshow@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at DaveCabinFF and at CPatrickNFL. Leave us a voicemail at 978-615-9214. And make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.